Welcome to another episode of I Can Talk Kayfabe, because I can talk kayfabe. Can you talk kayfabe?
I can talk IWCCW.
IWCCW. So when we, on the last episode, we were doing the ratings, and I never heard of IWCCW.
I am shocked at that.
And
I am shocked.
Sean played me some clips on YouTube, and I gotta say that I am now, my mind is blown. My mind is blown about IWCCW. I want to see more clips. I want to get all. If you have any IWCCW like on DVD or whatever, send it to me, please.
Just send me the best. I wish could please buy this footage and put it up on the network because it's got. It's got the fucking Tasmaniac in it.
The Tasmaniac, Super Duper Mario, who won his match without taking a bump, and then all the kids rushed in the ring, and it was really creepy, and it was awesome.
He was the one that's. The rest of the guy did all the bumping for him because the guy ran at him. He got a clothesline. He locked up. He got a clothesline. He walked over the guy twice, and then he did a splash.
Yeah.
Where he literally did not leave his feet during the splash.
He stepped on him, too.
He stepped on him twice.
That's how he set up for the splash.
That was a setup. And he was an actual wrestler. There was Curly Mo and Super Duper Mario, and I think they're actual tag team. I think that was an actual tag team.
Oh wow,
I got to find more of this now. I got to watch more of this. I got to see if I can find it because I'm surprised as growing up in Buffalo that never came across.
I never knew about this.
I felt like I knew more about IWCCW than I did about like other promotions.
So what year that was? 91.
91.
We were looking at that other magazine.
91, 92.
So it was early 90s. I didn't see it. I don't know why I didn't see this.
I mean, if you read the aftermags, which you said you did.
Yeah, but I probably
didn't. I don't know, Joe, can you talk kayfabe?
I can talk kayfabe. I just didn't pay attention to the IWCCW. Like, don't get me wrong. I could go back and I have nothing but fond memories about reading about the Memphis feuds and all that.
Yes,
but,
yes.
But yeah, I know. That just totally, I totally missed the mark on that one. Wow.
Are there any other forgotten promotions that from growing up that you probably.
I don't know about forgotten, but like. There's promotions that I didn't watch when they were on that later on I started watching, like UWF.
What, the Abrams one?
Yeah, not the Abrams one, like the real one, the Bill Watts one.
I remember seeing that because I used to watch like the Power Hour. Oh, by the way, this is like, yeah, do we say who we are, Sean and Joe?
Yeah, that's us. I'm Joe.
I'm Sean.
And we're on Twitter, YouTube, and all that. Sweatpants Joe.
Angry Hill Sean.
Okay, so got that out of the way. Like when it was on, I didn't watch UWF. I remember my grandma loved it, and I didn't watch it. She tried to get me to watch it with her once, and I was like, no, I want to watch WWF. I don't want to watch this. This isn't what I like. And then I didn't really watch Jim Crockett Promotions as a kid or WCW until... I don't even know. I remember we took a family vacation to Virginia Beach in 1989. Yeah, it was 1989, and I was sick the whole drive down. And in the hotel room, my dad and I were watching TV, and he put on wrestling, and it was Jim Crockett Promotions. And I never really watched it, but my dad put it on. And I, because he knew I liked wrestling, and I was sick, and I didn't know any better. So that was like my only experience with Jim Crockett Promotions in the 80s, was just that one watching it while I was sick. So I had to go back and watch all this stuff later as an adult and appreciate it. But
yeah, no, I remember watching WCW or Jim Crockett back in like 87. Because I remember buying WCW, you know, I used to have a bunch of, you know, Pro Wrestling Illustrateds and stuff from that era. So I remember watching a lot of it. And then I probably just watched WWF from like 88 until 91 and then started watching, you know, Crockett again. And, you know, that's when I discovered, you know, other stuff like WCCW and, you know, all these other. Chappelle Promotions, which in Buffalo you only had like a few things you could watch, so and I was not old enough to trade tapes.
Yeah, and then like when Ric Flair left and came to WWF, And then he went back to WCW. That's kind of when I started watching WCW. So we're talking, what is that, 93?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wasn't really watching it then. So, yeah. But I don't know. And then USWA.
USWA, I feel like I – okay, so 91, I did watch a lot of US – or, yeah, a lot of USWA and Global.
I did watch a lot of Global. When I was a kid, Global was on after school. I watched a lot of
right.
Global.
I kind of caught about that. And also there was I remember seeing it on, I think it was Sport, it was like on whatever channel, the same channel that I thought was Empire, so Adelphia or like whatever, public access. And they had a random thing where it was some promotion out of Florida, IWF or something, and it had Lou Perez, who was Al Perez's brother.
I was going to say, I've heard of Al Perez.
But it was Lou Perez, and there was also an Anderson. I think it was Cliff Anderson, who was somehow related to an Anderson.
It sounds like the GoBots promotion already.
And the tag champions at the time were Thunder and Lightning.
Okay.
Who went on to have a short run in WCW in the mid-90s.
I remember. Yeah.
And I believe one of them was Jeff Farmer, who went on to become the Fake Sting.
Yeah, the Fake Sting. Yeah.
So that was a thing that I saw at least one or two episodes of TV.
I do remember Thunder and Lightning. I don't know. I was a kid and I was stuck in my own ways. I was like, WWF or nothing. But I mean, yeah, I watched AWA when it was on ESPN. And then when they went away and Global came on, I watched Global.
Yeah.
But other than that, I didn't really watch any wrestling until I was like in my early teens. And then I started watching WCW.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's...
And, like, looking back on it now, I wish I would have watched... See, this is another thing where I wish I was 10 years older than I was, because I would have appreciated Jim Crockett Promotions when it was actually a thing.
Yeah.
That's all I watch when I turn on the network now is Jim Crockett.
It's the best stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I'm watching right now.
It really is the best stuff.
It's, you know, I mean, until they put on, you know, IWCCW, then I'll be watching that.
Well, yeah. I mean, come on. That goes without saying.
The best, WWE Network collections, Curly Moe and Super Duper Mario, the best matches.
Chief Thunder Mountain.
RIP, Chief Thunder Mountain. Okay, so we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk kayfabe about our book for this week.
Hey, I'm Jen.
And I'm Sean. We're here to tell you about our podcast, Worst Collection Ever.
And this is the show where we tell you about the worst comic book collection in existence. And it just happens to belong to us.
We have some of the worst comics from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're bad. They're not worth anything.
No good.
Why do we own them? Bad. I own a number of issues of Terror Inc. and Guy Gardner.
Basically, we go around to local comic book stores and we buy everything we can out of dollar boxes.
We tell you about the weird stuff in them. We tell you about stuff that's related to them. We go into tangents and we're very uninformed. So,
oh my God, totally. But totally check out our podcast because you'll hear us just talk and joke about Marvel books and DC books from God only knows when.
That's right. It's our show, Worst Collection Ever, every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Download, rate, subscribe, tell a friend.
It'll be good and terrible, but good.
And we are back here in I Could Talk Kayfabe.
Yeah.
And it's Ictory Sports Wrestling.
Ictory.
Well, it's Victory Sports Wrestling.
This is bad design.
And it's a very, very bad cover where the D and the, or the W and the V are supposed to be two but one letters. But luckily above the thing, it says Victory Sports Wrestling Magazine.
Well, also too, you know that the V stands for victory because the V has stars in it.
It has stars in it.
So it's supposed to be, but the rest of it, it looks, yeah, it looks bad.
Yeah. It's not a very good, very good logo.
No.
They weren't really thinking.
And this is an Aftermag.
It is.
But it's one that you didn't see a lot of, I feel. I feel like it wasn't really it wasn't really, I don't know, I just felt this one wasn't really widespread. And this is, actually, I think this might have been like one of the last ones they did of this particular one.
And there's a, on the cover, there's not really a cover athlete. It's
a pastiche.
I will say a smorgasbord of wrestlers.
Oh, well, they use the word smorgasbord on the cover.
Exactly, because in the top corner, you have the Road Warriors.
Okay, so this is how it goes. So top corner, you have the Road Warriors invite you to their smorgasbord of violence.
Which, okay, when I found this magazine in the wild, I found this in a thrift store, and I thought that was the funniest thing I have ever read. And I like posted it on Instagram and everything, and everyone who saw it laughed. They thought it was hilarious. Fast forward to a few months later, I'm watching the WWE Network, and they cut a promo, and Animal said that he's going to have a smorgasbord of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I just started laughing again. So this was actually a thing that the Road Warriors said was a smorgasbord of violence.
Okay, well, here's the thing. So it has that little banner on there, right? But the picture is, you know, is this picture of the Road Warriors, and you got Animal's, you know, kind of hunched over, and he's, you know, his tongue out, and he's like, ah.
Yeah.
And Hawk is like kind of like he just heard a really good joke, and he's kind of like, aha, you know. And then Paul Ellering is in the back, and he's kind of like,
he's holding a newspaper,
he's holding his Wall Street Journal and his sunglasses off of his face, and he's not making any expression on his face. He's just kind of like, you know, whatever. And then right above it, it just says, "The joy of sadism!" exclamation point. It's just a very oddly, very odd photo. And it felt like this picture was like an outtake that they weren't planning to use, but they used it anyways. I do like that they used it. Also around this magazine, we have Bob Orton's tragic mission, cripple Paul Orndorff or else. Hopefully, or else was a part of a bigger plot where it was his son Randy was going to be kidnapped. And I kind of wish it was that. Unfortunately, I don't know what the or else was. Even after reading the article, I didn't really felt like there was much at stake in this article. But also, Magnum TA, I battled for my life and saved my career.
I don't think he saved his career.
No.
As later on we would find out, I don't think he did.
No, the fall of 1986 was not good for him.
He did battle for his life, I'll give him that.
Yeah.
There was no saving his career. But the bottom one, which is my favorite headline, Sergeant Slaughter versus Ric Flair. Why the Kremlin loved this match. you see in the photos, like, Ric Flair is giving Sergeant Slaughter the figure four.
No, it looks like it's the other way.
The vice versa.
I think it's the other way around. I think because Slaughter doesn't look like he's as much pain, but Flair is.
Yeah, he's like screaming. So maybe it is. Flair's saying, the way, look at Slaughter's leg is over. Yeah, that's definitely the other way around. Okay, Slaughter is giving Flair the figure four.
That's right.
Wow.
And the Kremlin is loving it.
They love it.
So we're gonna find out why they love it. So basically the way that this magazine is structured is there's not columns in here. There's just a lot of different articles. And I feel like this is almost like kind of like a reprint, maybe, but maybe it's not. I don't know. Cause I felt like they always had to keep these current.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot of articles in here. And
it's so like when you don't have columns, you don't really have personality.
It's yeah.
Just kind of news.
It's kind of news. And what's really aggravating about this magazine is that you start reading an article and then you have to go to the back of the magazine to finish it. So you kind of have to it's annoying.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of the way it is. But so I guess let's go we'll go through a few of these things. I have notes on some of these.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just talk about these real quick. I don't know if you have, you know, you can, we'll just all chime in here.
I definitely want to just, I know where I want to go, but this is an intriguing article. Well, it's a good one to start off with. 108 stitches in Steve Williams' eye. And you see his eye, and it's all like busted open.
Yeah.
And he's got like a straight on look on his face, and he's just, he looks very miserable, and his one eye is hardly open because it's busted open. 108 stitches is a lot of stitches.
And he said,
I find that hard to believe that it's that many stitches.
No, it was probably that many.
Yeah?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing, though. If his eye required 108 stitches, how did he even have an eye left? Because you have enough, do you even have enough space for 108 stitches in your eye?
I had a cut over my eye, and I needed 5 stitches. And that's a pretty big scar. And it's only 5 stitches, so 108 seems like an awful lot.
Yeah, unless if they have, I mean, what do they do? Stitch up his fucking third eye?
Can you imagine how long it must have taken to get 108 stitches removed? That's a long time. You're probably sitting in that chair for a couple hours.
Yeah. So the whole idea was Steve Williams had 108 stitches in his eye, and he says, quote, "Sew me up, Doc. I've got a match tonight." Yeah, he had a match with Brad Armstrong. Brad Armstrong accidentally threw his elbow into his eye and basically split it wide open, and there was gashes everywhere, and he was super close to losing his eye, but he's Steve Williams, and he's the toughest motherfucker ever.
Yeah.
And he literally just got his eye sewn back up and went back out and wrestled.
He's as tough as a hockey player. I'll tell you that, because hockey players would have done the same thing.
Yeah, I will say, though, because it sucks because they don't actually show the pictures of his eye to show him being examined.
Yeah, like post-injury, like later on. Like this is obviously a different day.
Yeah.
And they're doing like a follow-up visit. They're taking his blood pressure, and they're like, he's got his hand covering over his eye, and he's doing an eye test. And the doctor's looking at his retina. So, I mean, it's a legit injury.
It actually happened. We're not saying it didn't happen. Yeah.
So they're definitely, it's kind of cool, a little backstage coverage of his injury. So,
yeah. And I do, this is probably the most in-depth description that you would ever have for a Steve Williams Brad Armstrong match, for any Brad Armstrong match. I mean, there's literally like giant paragraphs about this match leading up to this accident, this accidental beating. And then we get this picture about, because it's about him, you know, kind of, this is where he just kind of turned face. He was always a heel, but then eventually he turned face.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of dramatic pictures, and also this picture of him, you know, when he was a rule breaker, and he's wrestling Chavo Guerrero, and it looks like he's murdering Chavo Guerrero, not Chavo, R.I.P. Chavo, Hector Guerrero. This is Hector, and Hector, because Hector just is bloody as hell. It's a great wrestling picture.
Hector's alive and well.
Hector's alive and well. Lasertron is alive and well. yeah, it's pretty wild. What else? So now we get to, first of all, because we're just kind of going through this, we'll just go through this book because it's easier, because I don't want to keep going back and forth.
Yeah, there's nothing to really skip around about. So we got an ad for Muscle Milk.
Muscle Mix. Now, I want to say this. This is Muscle Mix. Finally, a scientific system of strength and weight gain that works. And there's a bunch of stuff in here about this.
And it's a picture of a syringe.
Is that a syringe?
It looks like a syringe.
It doesn't look as easy. It looks like a screwdriver.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Or it could be a syringe, but it looks like a screwdriver. And apparently you use this to get bigger.
Yeah.
And it just, all it has in here is about test results. And it doesn't really tell you what's in it. Like, I don't think there's anything in here that says exactly what's in it, other than it has no harmful side effects and can be taken for years without interruption. And it comes with a workout and a nutrition program, and is available in granule or liquid form. 1 month supply, $30, only $1 a day. Add $2 for shipping. So you can jab yourself with this screwdriver, this muscle screwdriver, for only $30.
I want to try it.
Can we do this? Dash Products in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Are they still around? Or did they?
It's an 800 number.
Oh, we should call there.
Maybe we should call.
We should call.
We find out.
Yeah. So yeah, this is the George Zahorian special, Dr. Zahorian.
So here we are. We're at the cover story. Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
Ric Flair. Why the Kremlin loved this match.
Okay. So the premise of this story is, because if you read it, it doesn't really, you get pictures of the match. You get pictures of a match that apparently happened. I'm assuming this was Pro Wrestling USA, maybe, because you know, Slaughter was in, I think, AWA at the time. And, you know, Flair obviously was NWA champ.
Pro Wrestling USA, another reason why I wish I was 10 years older.
Yeah, that's another one.
I would have been able to watch Pro Wrestling USA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have been all about going on road trips to Jersey to Pro Wrestling USA events.
That's shit that we would have been doing, yeah. Yeah. If Monday Night Mayhem was 10 years ahead of time,
yeah,
20 years ahead of time, we would have been – if podcasting was around then, which if I can go back in time, I would start a podcast in 1985.
I'm not even saying start a podcast. I'm just saying, like, if I was old enough, like if I was 20 years old in 1985, I would have been there.
Yeah.
I would have been right there with the Kremlin watching this with match.
You and Gorbachev sitting front row. Gorbachev
and the other Russian diplomats.
So the whole story about this book is basically a big discussion about how the Kremlin and how Russia is very much invested in pro wrestling.
Oh, okay.
And very much invested in how American pro wrestling shakes down.
They should be. They're invested in our elections. So.
And so Ivan Koloff receives a telegram basically telling him, don't do anything in this match, but you will be rewarded for your participation in this. And the idea is that the Kremlin is very happy that this match is happening, because they were worried that Flair and Slaughter were going to team up to take on the Koloffs and take their titles.
Oh.
And instead of wrestling the Koloffs, they're wrestling each other and they're softening each other up. And that means they'll make them easier, less of a threat to the mighty Koloffs.
So that's why the Kremlin loved the match.
The Kremlin is very happy. And there's a quote in here that I absolutely love. First of all, we also get a specialist. We have another specialist here.
Oh, it's Dr. Stephen...
Stephen Ballin, a specialist in Russian psychology.
Oh, okay.
Who is taking his time out of his busy day of fighting the Cold War in 1986 to talk to Victory Sports Wrestling about this. He is very much invested, and we appreciate his service.
They probably had him on the Rolodex, yeah.
So they're talking about this. They're breaking the majority of this article is them breaking down this telegram that Ivan Koloff has received.
Oh, okay.
And they have our thing in here where this expert says, Major Alexei Dorbanov signs this, article scientist, and basically he's a like a low level general that signs this telegram to tell Ivan Koloff, you are great. But apparently he's important enough to handle this. And so I'll just read this article. Obviously, the Soviets perceive a working combination of Slaughter and Flair to pose an enormous problem. For Overseas Protocol to handle the affair is very significant, and for Dorbanov to sign the telegram is very telling. Obviously, the Russians have surmised correctly that professional wrestling is fundamental to the American consciousness. In 1986, you know what? I guess you could say that.
Yeah.
Because WrestleMania, Bill Baracci at WrestleMania it was a big deal. It was a
huge deal.
Huge deal.
Billy Martin was there, too.
Billy Martin was there. Pat Patterson was there.
WrestleMania 2, the Where's the Beef lady and the Burger King guy was
the
there.
Russians were the Kremlin was very happy that the Where the Beef lady was there, because that means she is not criticizing the beef in Russia.
Yeah.
She's more worried about being the timekeeper in whatever fucking match.
I wish that you still worked at the one place we can get Yakov Smirnov on here to get his thoughts.
Oh, you know, Yakov Smirnov. Yeah, Yakov would have he would have some thoughts on this. He'd be like, in Russia, Koloff wrestles you.
Yeah.
or something. But that's basically it. They're worried about Slaughter and Flair teaming up to take on the Koloffs. And they're wrestling each other.
They shouldn't be worried.
That was never a possibility.
Never going to happen.
Slaughter and Flair were never going to team up and do anything. It's a miracle that they even wrestled each other in 1986.
I didn't even know they had a match, which is...
Because it's Pro Wrestling USA, and this was the one match that they got out of it.
Look at this picture over here. So you have like Slaughter standing, like Flair looks like he's dropping an elbow, but Slaughter's standing next to him. Like I don't know.
He's doing the hammerlock.
Is that a hammerlock?
He's doing the thing with the.
Okay, it's a very.
You
weird...
just can't see because it's not very well. Like you can't really see his hand pulling down and all that. So that's basically it. That's basically this article, it's fantastic that they went that many lengths to have a very. It's almost like a very much like a Cold War Rusky article to, satiate the American, patriotism of 1986 of the people that are reading this magazine.
Does it say in the article who actually won the match?
Oh, I don't know. I don't care.
You got this big brutal match that the Russians love. And there's so many photos, and it's Ric Flair and Sergeant Slaughter.
I'm going to assume it ended in a count out of some sort.
I'm going to assume Ric Flair won because he was the champion.
You think Slaughter's jobbing?
I don't think Slaughter is getting a win in that match.
But he's not. I don't think he's getting pinned.
Probably getting pinned.
I don't know. Let's see if we can find that video. Find that match on tape. Bob Orton's tragic mission, cripple Paul Orndorff, or else. And so basically this mag is just about how after WrestleMania 1, Orton and Orndorff and Piper split.
Mm-hmm.
And now it was up to Bob Orton to take out Orndorff.
Orton still has the cast on.
He still has the cast on, but the whole, the big story, big part of it's like, well, Orton and Orndorff are really good friends, on the road and stuff, and it's tragic that they have to fight each other.
Why would you want to cripple them?
I don't know, because Piper wanted them to.
Yeah,
and Piper, or else.
Or else you're going to have to go hang out with Adrian Adonis. That's what it is.
Nowhere else, and you're going to have to wear a pink hat.
Yeah.
And they use the majority of the first part of this article is the story is like the comparison that Orton and Orndorff are much like Lenny and George of Mice and Men.
Oh.
It's a very nuanced article. I'll have to say it. Somebody put a lot of work into this. So
it's like an article Ivan the Impaler would write.
Yeah. It's a very literary article. So yeah, that's really all I could say about it.
Got a special interview with Kevin, or is that Mike?
That's
Von
Mike
Erich?
Von Erich.
Oh, Mike Von Erich.
R.I.P. Mike Von Erich.
Yeah. He does his talking. He's holding up his plaque for what is that?
He is Rookie of the Year. Inspirational Wrestler of the Year.
A what?
From 1986. Because 85, he had toxic shock syndrome, remember? And he got really sick.
Yeah.
And then he came back, and there was like, if you watch like some of these old like videos from like the time when he was, you were like, Mike Von Erich, how are you? You're coming back to wrestle, right? And he's like, not anywhere on this earth. He just had a horrible health experience, health scare. And, he still came back to wrestle and ended up killing himself. Very tragic. But basically, it's like, oh, you're going to do better and you're going to do this and whatever.
It's like, man, no.
Yeah. Why this singles match may make the Dragon a tag team champion. And it's Ricky Steamboat and Brutus Beefcake. And the whole idea is that, I want to say here. So it's got a lot of these pictures of Steamboat and Beefcake wrestling. And apparently this was taking place in Vegas in the Sands.
Yeah, I see the Sands Casino game room signs.
In the Copa Room.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, Can I? That would have been kind of fun. It's like, that's like an AWA taping.
I didn't even realize that WWF ran in Vegas.
In 85? Yeah. You think they could have done a lot better in Vegas in 85?
Yeah, and you have Beefcake and Steamboat.
But it couldn't get into the Showboat in the Riviera because that's where AWA was.
And it looks like there's like a handful of fans.
No, there's like nobody there.
Yeah, like there's no crowd. There's like a front row, and that's about it. But yeah, I would have loved to have seen Beefcake in Vegas. Yeah,
Beefcake in Vegas. That's how you put it on the billboard. Yeah. Beefcake in Vegas. You're like, oh man.
Yeah, against Ricky Steamboat, I'm there. I'm there.
So they're basically talking to how Steamboat hasn't wrestled really. He hasn't been that significant in his. I guess his WWF run at this point.
Not at this point.
I mean, he's been there for about a year at least.
Yeah.
And he hasn't done anything, you know, of note other than just wrestle Don Morocco and, you know, Matt Bourne at WrestleMania, and that's it, you know. And they're saying, well, maybe if he, because since he wrestled this match against Steamboat and he beat, you know, he's capable of beating Steamboat, and it means he could probably handle wrestling with, he's also wrestling, I think, Valentine too, and at this time Valentine and Steamboat are, you know, or Valentine and Beefcake are, you know, the dream team, and they're contenders, or I think they're actually the champions at this time, aren't
they? They're probably the champions at this time.
Are they the champions? Let's see. Yeah, they're the champs at the time. Yeah, they're the champs. It's just like this big, you know, it's this thing where it's like, oh yeah, he could get another person. He's teamed with Junkyard Dog and everything like that, and it's not as good. Maybe he should team with Hogan. Yeah. But they have this great this thing in here. Yeah, Junkyard Dog and Tito and Pedro and all those things, and they're like, well, he needs to find the right kind to if he could beat Beefcake and Valentine on his own, individually on his own, he should find a partner that can make him beat, and they can have him win the titles. And they're like, well, maybe we should team with Hogan. And the way that they kind of put this out, they kind of shoot that down, is they're like, well, Hogan is constantly booked by his PR firm.
Oh.
So he is unable to be available. Yeah, here it is. The only thing standing in the way, because Matt Brock, imaginary Matt Brock, says that Hogan would be the best partner for him.
Okay.
And Matt Brock is like, well, the few times Hogan and Steamboat have teamed together, their alliance has proven unapproachable.
Oh.
The only thing standing in the way of their success may be Hogan's relations firm, which seems to have the Hulkster book solid for the next 590 days, thus prohibiting him and Steamboat from wrestling regularly. So it's, yeah, which basically kind of implies Vince McMahon doesn't have any control over Hulk Hogan's schedule.
No, it's all his
PR. It's all his PR firm. It's all Hollywood. Vince McMahon is just, you know, he's not, nobody else. Hogan, it's PR people that book wrestling matches for Hulk Hogan, which is why, you know, he might wrestle occasionally, you know, against Macho Man or Don Morocco or John Studd at this time, and, you know, not team with Ricky Steamboat to win the tag titles.
Hmm.
That's the implication in that.
I wish I could have gone to this show in Vegas.
Yeah, the Sands. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
I really do. I didn't, like I said, I didn't know that they ran shows in Vegas. But here we got the Road Warriors with their smorgasbord of violence.
Yeah, they're
inviting us to it.
They're having a big smorgasbord of violence. The joy of sadism.
Yes.
And it's all about this match that they had, which I think I've seen on tape. It's actually on like some, I think it was in Florida they did this, where it was him. Yeah, it was in Florida. It was the Word Warriors against Harley Race and Stan Hansen.
Oh, that's a match.
That's a match. And it's all about how – it's like this very graphic story about how they really enjoy beating people up and hurting people. But they really – but it's not a sexual thing.
No.
But there's very like graphic things, like this is what Hawk says. And then when I smashed his head into the corner post, I thought his false teeth would come flying out on the floor. You know what's best about that? When his skull cracked into the steel post, I could feel the vibrations all the way up my shoulder. That feels better than my body on a, that felt better to my body than a post-match rubdown. But it's not sexual or anything.
I'm being uncomfortable with this podcast all of a sudden.
Exactly. I know. This is... And then there's another one in here where... Where's the other one that Hawk Animal has? Animal gets fucking... He says... And then that old man race, ha, there's nothing better than planting a boot into a man's back and feeling the spine take on a new shape underfoot, the shape of the boot and the heel. What's even better is that each time you kick a man in the back like that, his groan gets a little louder and lasts a little longer. But it's not sexual.
That sounds like a Big Red commercial.
The joys of Big Red. The joys of cinnamon gum.
So groan a little louder and groan a little longer.
Oh, yeah. You have anything else you want to say about that article?
I mean, I think I've said everything.
I think it's all you can say.
There was definitely a smorgasbord of violence.
A smorgasbord of something. Smorgasbord of sadism.
Oh, man.
Who wrote this? Who wrote this? Who's responsible for this? Is this Bill Apter? Did Eddie Elner write this?
Matt Brock wrote in the next article.
Sometimes these are written by nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to own up to this.
Nobody's taking credit for this one.
Yeah. Matt Brock wrote an article about Beware of Dog. JYD puts the bite on Terry Funk. Now, basically, did you read this?
I didn't read this, but this is a feud I remember as a kid.
There's a feud I remember. This is actually on a few. There's actually a Sports Review Wrestling or a wrestler or something that has like Terry Funk and JYD on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's one. It's definitely an article that, or definitely a feud that, like, Terry Funk in the WWF in the 80s, I always felt disappointed that he wasn't around more, because when I got to watch him more, well, here's the thing. When I was a kid, I had the WWF LGN.
Yeah, Terry so did Funk. I had both of those. LGN.
I did, and I had him.
I had them have their feud in my living room.
I was able to put. And you also did you? I tried this a few times, and it was always fun. You know those mini NFL helmets you can get out of like a vending machine?
Yeah.
I used to stick those on the wrestlers' heads.
Okay.
And I did it on JYD's head, and it fit perfectly.
Oh wow!
Because he had
thought to try that.
Yeah, it fit perfectly. Yeah. But Terry Funk, yeah, he came with like
you couldn't do that with a Hillbilly Jim figure.
No, you couldn't do that really any other figure except for JYD. Maybe Piper, maybe Orndorff.
Yeah, not Savage.
Not Savage, not Hogan. I don't think Hogan you couldn't do. No. Hogan's would be too loose, I think, because he didn't have hair.
Yeah.
Maybe Sheiky. Well, Sheiky beats too small because he was bald. But yeah, JYD. JYD was the perfect one to wear a helmet.
If he had the short hair Andre the Giant, maybe, but I never had that figure.
Nah. Yeah, I never. I don't remember really being a short hair. Well, did they release one with him in yellow trunks?
There was three Andre the Giant figures. There was the one that everyone had with the big afro.
Yeah.
And then there was one with blue trunks and short hair.
Oh, okay.
And then there was the later one was with the singlet and the short hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Which nobody can get their hands on. That one's so ridiculously rare.
So
they had that one I think you probably do it with that one, but yeah, you definitely can't do it with the one that everyone had with the big afro.
No, you have one fit in the afro. I found it funny that they had a Bruno figure, but then again, he was back in wrestling and he was pretty prominent back then. So
yeah, I remember there was this article talking about how great he was and how he never had a figure. I was like, oh, we had a figure, and I emailed them, and they actually wrote a correction that they was like, oh, we did have a figure. So, yeah.
And then eventually they made one once they got, you know, him involved with the company again. They made the Mattel ones and stuff.
Hall of Fame one.
But this the idea of this article is that the feud that JYD and Funk are having is actually rooted in racial relations dating back to when the New World settlers came to the African villages were kidnapped natives from the African villages and sold them as slaves.
Yeah, I don't think Terry Funk had anything to do with that.
No, he didn't. No, I'm pretty sure he didn't. I'm pretty sure he just I am 100% sure that he probably did not have anything to do with slave trading.
Or his ancestors for that matter. I can't prove that, but I'm pretty certain that they didn't.
But you know, but they made it as if this was that was pretty much like you know, the reason why. I mean, not to saying that because this is also around the time when Terry Funk beat up Mel Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the ring guy and the announcer, the black guy. And they were trying to make it into like a...
a race thing, yeah.
It was like a race thing or whatever. One thing I know about Mel Phillips, wasn't he really into feet? Was that his... I only know a few wrestlers that were into feet.
Mm-hmm. I remember Heidenreich was, wasn't he? Or no,
Snitsky. Siski was. So anyways, but that's what this article's about. And, you know, there's a lot of race... discussion about race in this article. It's a pretty heavy article, you know, about Terry Funk and JYD.
I remember Rex Ryan, his foot fetish video controversy that came
out.
His house is for sale in Buffalo if you want to buy it.
No, I don't want to.
He has a Buffalo Bills shuffleboard table that I want.
Does he also have a tattoo of the Bills?
No, he had a tattoo of his wife, and she was wearing a Jets jersey, and then he had the tattoo artist change it to a Bills jersey. So now they'll probably just leave it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to go over. I don't know. Whatever. It's not my problem.
Not my arm.
Yeah.
Magnum TA, I battled for my career, for my life and saved my career. Basically, he was wrestling
Abdullah the Butcher.
Which I'd love to see that match. I kind of have a thing to want to watch Abdullah the Butcher matches because even though they're not very good, I just kind of like the idea of Abdullah the Butcher.
Yeah.
Just like this big fat black guy with his pants hiked up really high and he's just running. Like he moves very quickly usually. Like when he's wrestling people, he just kind of runs at people and he stabs them and he hits them with things and it looks very awkward, especially if it's like a jobber and it's just some schmuck getting thrown around. Or if he's fighting like a guy like, you know, like Brody and he's, you know, fucking Brody's just laying into him and stuff.
And it does look like he's battled for his life because he's covered in blood, Magnum.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, it's bloody and, you know, there's chairs flying around.
I hope he didn't get hepatitis.
No, I hope that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But basically the idea is that he wrestled Abdullah and he kind of helped get him get fired up so he can go on and wrestle Tully Blanchard at Starrcade and, you know, in that cage match, which is awesome. It's a great match. So, yeah. You get a nice picture. You can put this in your room.
Thinking about it.
Rick Morton. Not Ricky, Rick Morton,
yeah.
Magnum PA, and Robert Gibson, the real rock and wrestling connection.
Yeah, because they're rock and rollers and he wrestles.
He wrestles. Yeah, they don't wrestle. They actually play in... whatever. Hall of Famers, though.
Hall of Famers now.
Which means we might get them in the WWE 2K18 game.
Maybe.
And if we do, hopefully they'll add in a Midnight Express...
I doubt it
because that was somebody I had this discussion about this on Facebook when this came out, and I was like, oh, this is going to happen. Somebody's like, you know what's going to happen is they're going to make – it's going to be the Hall of Fame match is going to be the Rock and Roll Express against the Headbangers from like Raw or something for the NWA title. You're going to – because the Headbangers are already kind of under contract too.
I can see that happening, yeah.
And that's going to suck. That's going to blow because I do not need – and either of the Headbangers in any game I'm playing in 2017.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of another tag team they could put in.
Well, here's the thing. They can do the new Midnight Express.
Yeah.
They can do, what is it? Not SummerSlam. Survivor Series 93, them versus the Heavenly Bodies.
I just don't see them doing anything where it's Jim Cornette related.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're not going to get... Yeah, I mean...
So I could maybe see the Midnight Express, just no Jim Cornette.
Or they can maybe do them against the Russians, so we can get Nikita Koloff and an Ivan Koloff.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, because if there's no Russian, you got no Cornette involved.
They'll probably just do it against the Freebirds, because they already have a Freebirds.
Did they ever wrestle the Freebirds in, like, a match?
They don't care.
I do.
I know. I do too.
Well, they're doing the thing in the new pack, the DLC, and it's like
the Freebirds and the Von Erichs.
But no, but the other match is like the Freebirds. It's Jimmy Garvin and Michael Hayes, the Freebirds, against like, I think it's like DDP and Cactus Jack.
Oh yeah,
it's like some random match from WCW like 92. So yeah, that's what they're gonna do. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe they'll do the Rock and Rolls versus Tully and Arn.
Yeah,
that's actually a very very good possibility. Or the Rock and Rolls versus Mandy Fernandez and Rick Rude. I'll take that.
Yeah,
give me that. A crooked referee is brought to justice. This is just a random one-off Memphis.
Yeah, and you see happening. Jerry Lawler punching some dude in the face.
Yeah, this is a really good shot of him punching him, which is probably the best worked punch ever because you can kind of see his fist not really that closed, but it looks awesome. Because Jerry Lawler, probably, from what I've heard, has, and just in terms of like from wrestlers and just watching him, he has some of the best punches like ever. He's just really good at it. So, and apparently he murdered this guy because this guy is bleeding to death.
Oh, look at him in that last photo.
Yeah. It's like it goes from like this guy just having like a normal like face, and then he is like bloodied beyond belief. Black and white bloodied photos make it seem a lot worse than it really is. So I think that's kind of funny. Corporal Kirshner, living in the shadow of Sergeant Slaughter. I don't know. You had something to say about this.
I mean, what else can you say? He really was just Sergeant Slaughter ripoff, is what he was. He's wrestling Rene Goulet in that one photo, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty awesome. But, what else is there to say about Corporal Kirshner? Sergeant Slaughter was like, he was a big deal, and then he wasn't there. So they're like, we need our own sergeants. We need somebody who ranks higher than a sergeant. How about a corporal? That's what Vince was saying. And then they came up with this guy, Corporal Kirshner. And I don't think anyone bought it. He had an action figure. He had a variant, too. He had...
what was the variant?
He had a figure that was clean-shaved and a figure with stubble.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So he was one of the few LJNs with a variant.
I can I say something real quick? Corporal Kirshner sort of looks like Pat Contry.
Yeah, kind of.
He kind of looks like Pat Contry if he was
Punk,
NES Punk. My favorite story about Corporal Kirshner is from Mick Foley's first book, talking about how when Corporal Kirshner was Leatherface in Japan and how he tried to – I think he was wrestling Mick Foley and he tried to fucking murder him with a board with a nail in it and the match or something.
Oh, wow.
It's something where he comes up in the book and he's just like, he is the most – insane dude ever because he's just trying to murder you. And then Corporal Kirshner was believed to be dead a couple years ago. Remember that?
Yeah.
The WWE was like, he's dead. And then they're like, he's like, no, I'm not. He's like, he's not dead, guys. Here's his figure. Here you go. He's not dead.
I don't think I had that figure. No, I didn't have that figure. Yeah.
And then we get, this is the thing. So now we get all the episode issues. Real quick. So there are, lots of ads for guns in here.
Yeah.
But like fake guns, like pellet guns.
And firing pellet
guns. Handguns. There's literally machine guns.
But they're all pellet guns.
All pellet guns, though. So they're safe.
And that one has a magazine.
What? Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's this one. A semi-automatic machine gun at only $3.95.
Yeah.
But it shoots,
holds 10 rounds.
Bullets. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. Oh, look at this. There are literally four guns.
That one's got a friggin' scope on it.
That's got a scope. And right underneath it, an ad for the American Heart Association, just in case you want to, make sure you catch that.
There's an unauthorized biography on Hulk Hogan.
In 1985, we had those. Unauthorized. Hulkamania, Hulk Hogan, America's Hero by Abbott Neal.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a pen name.
That's Vince Neal's dad.
Oh.
That's Vince Neil's father.
You sure it's not Sam Neil's father?
Sam Neil's. No, Sam Neil has two L's.
Oh, that's right.
He's not the same guy.
I love this advertisement.
Oh, well, yeah, it was the belly blaster?
Yeah, the belly blaster. It's just like these man and a woman laying down, and they have like bungee cords hooked to their legs and their ankles and their hands, and they're just having a good time.
I'm not gonna lie, that looks like fun. I kind of want to do that at home. So now we get to our favorite part, the ratings.
The ratings.
Or one of our favorite parts.
Yeah. So WWF is a looks like it's a world title by now.
Yes.
Because it's next to the AWA and the NWA.
Yep.
It's not over here where world class is. So.
No, this is before they had the way that they did these. It's a different kind of format, you know, but it's still the same thing pretty much. And you've got NWA, AWA, and WWF, and World Championship, which so. The way that I believe this NWA mm-hmm. represents all of these different territories.
Yeah.
But World Championship just represents.
Was that like, Georgia?
Like Georgia yeah. and like Crockett, basically. Yeah. You know, Jim Crockett. What else? What do I hear? This is what I don't get sometimes is the contenders for some of these titles
mm-hmm.
are. Like, I don't understand why, for instance, like, Kerry Von Erich in the top 10 is number 6.
Yeah.
He is the number one contender for the world-class title. Rick Rude is the world-class champion. He's number 9.
Yeah.
Also in here, Stan Hansen, AWA world champion, number 3. And the number 3 contender to the AWA title is Bruiser Brody at number 10. However, the contenders, I mean, all the other contenders, I don't see them?
No, there's no number 2 or number 1 contender.
And there's no number 3 contender to the NWA title unless if that's Bruiser or unless if that's Rick Rude because it's technically cuz US champion is number 1. And then you have Well, no, that's right. Yeah, this doesn't make sense. This is dumb. Wrestling is dumb. Yeah, and there's, yeah, also yeah, fantastic like the fantastic The Fantastics and the Fabulous Ones are listed in the tag teams, and they're number one contender. Fabs are the contenders to the U.S. tag titles. I'm assuming the Florida version. And then the Fantastics are the contenders to the Mid-South titles, or Mid-Southern titles, excuse me. And but the champions for those respective belts are not in there. I don't understand how they do this.
Yeah, and then you got the Bushwhackers.
I know there's a rating analysis, but I don't think it actually... I don't know, maybe I should actually read this, but it's like... Yeah, I'll have to... In the three... Yeah, whatever. This is bullshit. This is bullshit.
But Continental Wrestling, you have Exotic Adrian Street. He's the champ, I guess, over there.
He was the main guy there. Yeah,
yeah, Brad Armstrong, and then you got Jerry.
This is a very good snapshot of Continental Wrestling, classic Continental Wrestling. You've got Brad Armstrong, you got Bullet Bob, you got Tommy Rich, you got the Fullers, you got Jimmy Golden, you got Tom Pritchard. This is a good. That's a good. I'll watch that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Is that where's this Continental? Is that Memphis?
No, that Continental is Alabama.
Oh, Alabama. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the Gulf States.
Where's Memphis?
Memphis is Mid-Southern.
That's Mid-Southern. Okay, yeah, Bill Dundee, he's the champ. That makes sense.
Or he's on top.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lawler.
Jerry Lawler's number 6.
Here's a name I don't know is Abdul Qaddafi.
Yeah, I don't know that name either.
So here's the thing. Abdul Qaddafi, spelled here one way. And then you look it up online. And Abdul Qaddafi comes up spelled with a G. So it's Gaddafi.
Yeah.
And that's how he was. And I don't know who this guy was. I'm assuming it was probably some guy that lived in, that was actually a guy from Memphis.
Yeah.
That had a bit of darker complexion than the other people. And they said, now you're an Indian guy. Or Libyan.
Must be like Mike Rotundo, Mike Rotunda, Lex Luger, Lex Lugar.
Lugar.
Yeah.
Speaking of Lex Lugar,
yeah.
He's here.
He's number one in Florida.
He's a Southern champ, I think, at this time.
He's over in Florida kicking butt.
Florida was this is actually a time. This is a good watching.
Yeah.
For Florida, because you had Blackjack was back there. Kevin Sullivan's Demon Army with Maha Singh, a.k.a. Bob Roop. You know, you had all these. This is stuff. I'll watch this all day.
And you got Mike Graham at number 10.
You got Jesse Barr. This is a who's who of Florida. There's a lot of who's who's in these wrestling in this rest in these in the territories here. UWF has, you know, your usual suspects.
Yeah.
You know, your Hacksaw, your, which by the way, Hacksaw is number 7 in NWA. So, and I find that to be weird because I'm not used to seeing him in any NWA ratings.
That's weird.
But he's in there because technically Mid-South and UWF were still kind of related to, you know, NWA overall. So that's why he's there.
This is back-to-back dicks. You got Dick Slater and Dick Murdoch coming in at 2 and 3.
Yeah, and then you have number 9, Taras Bulba, who was the he was like the evil Russian foreigner guy.
That, from Mongolia.
He was from Mongolia. He was kind of like, but he was also, I think he was another, he also became like a Russian guy. All I know is that I read something about how he ran afoul of Bill Watts pretty bad, and I think Bill Watts kicked his ass.
Oh.
I think. I'm probably wrong about this. I'm probably wrong. And then Northwest, you have Tom Zink. He's there.
He's up there.
Which is weird because I'm never used to seeing Tom Zink in anything other than like the Can-Am Connection going forward. But he, you know, he wrestled and, you know, that's where he got his start.
Yeah.
So that's where he, this is his early Tom Zink.
I wonder if he wore white trunks back then.
No, maybe he wore sky blue.
Yeah. All he ever wore was white.
No, he won the, I remember him when he was TV champ. He used to wear, he dabbled in hot pink. He dabbled in neon green.
Yeah, there's some pictures
of him. And he dabbled in an orange.
Yeah, he had some pictures of him in an orange.
He had, and I think when he was in AWF, he wore red, straight up red.
Oh, yeah, there are some pictures of him in red. I only remember him in white. That's just me, though.
That's because I think his action figure was his Galoob action figure.
His Galoob action figure and his Can-Am Connection days, he was white, yeah. And then there's a mugshot of him online, too.
also in here, Scott Doering, okay. a.k.a. Danny Doering's father.
Oh, is that...
No.
No, I don't know.
Well, I think that's it.
I think this is the end of the magazine.
That's how it ends.
Yeah. Oh, wait, we have a ratings analysis. They go in depth a little bit.
Oh, did you read this?
On how they talk about how the Hulk Hogan... how the WWF Championship is a world championship now. They recognize it. And the world class... Their title situation is still a regional championship, is what they talk about in this. So it's all explained in the ratings analysis. This column will tell fans how we go about rating more than 150 wrestlers in 14 different categories.
I like that this is a thing that, again, this is why I love wrestling magazines like this, because it's grown men arguing the points about fake titles and whether or not it's like, well, this is the world title. This is legit. And I'm like, and I think that's how people in the business maybe actually viewed it. But like looking at it, you know, now it just seemed ridiculous that somebody would argue this.
According to this, though, it looks like they let the readers choose whether or not that the WWF title should be world title status. And they chose, whereas world class, the point for this is now Rude's world class title will be viewed as certainly one of the most important titles in the sport, but will not be regarded as a world title.
Bullshit.
It's not to say that it won't change in the future. It depends on where and how the world class champion defends the title and how the wrestling world at large reacts to the actions of world class area in general. So
it wasn't going to do much after because Rude was gone, all the names are gone. And Kerry was in that accident, and it was rough times. Oh yeah, the back cover real quick. It's got the subscription. It's got my favorite wrestling cover of all time. I think we've talked about this before. I feel like this has been brought up where it's the Inside Wrestling, and it's the picture where half the cover is. Abdul the Butcher stabbing Dusty Rhodes in the eye, and Dusty Rhodes is bleeding like nuts. And I remember seeing this all the time, and just I always wanted to read that. And I think I found it at one point. Maybe I don't know.
I don't know what's going on in the wrestler. You have Dino Bravo. I can tell Bob Backlund how to defeat the Masked Superstar. And you see the Masked Superstar has Dino Bravo in a headlock.
Obviously, you can't tell him anything.
And then you have Mil Mascaras.
Frame him for black market cigarettes.
And you have the night the AWA world title was stolen from Mil Máscaras. Yeah. So I kind of want that magazine now.
Oh, Mil Máscaras. We have such a hard life.
So that's it for
Victory Sports Wrestling.
Victory Sports Wrestling or Victory Sports Wrestling
summer 1986.
Yeah, summer. It's a quarterly magazine.
Yeah, that's why it didn't last.
So, yeah.
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Angry Hero Sean, S-H-A-W-N. That's how you spell Sean.
I'm at Sweatpants Joe. Also on the Instagram, YouTube. Yeah. It's fun times.
Yeah, enjoy the. We'll be back next time with another book. If you have any suggestions, hit us up on social media, and we'll get to get an email address and maybe a Facebook page by the time everything's up and running. And by the way, if you're on iTunes, rate, subscribe, tell a friend, give us 5 stars.
5 stars rating.
You just write. I don't care what you write. If you want to say you guys are bullshit and give us 5 stars. By all means, tell us that you're from the Kremlin and you did love this slaughter.
Yeah, match. And if you were from the Kremlin and you were involved in that telegram sent to the Koloffs, by all means, get in touch with us because we want to know more about.
We want to know more about why you guys are paying attention to this.
But maybe Nikita could let us know. Maybe he could shed some light on this.
Maybe they could. I'm surprised they haven't been inducted into Trump's cabinet yet. I was saving that political joke for a while, and now I did it.
I hope he's not impeached by the time we air this podcast.
Oh, I know. It's going to be not going to be relevant.
Dated humor.
Anyways, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening, and enjoy wrestling.